Hello and welcome to another episode of the CIG Insider NJ podcast, brought to you by Capital Impact Group and Insider NJ. My guest today is George Helmy, who currently serves as Chief of Staff to Governor Phil Murphy. George Helmy was born in Jersey City to parents who immigrated from Egypt and who instilled in their son a deep appreciation for everything this country has to offer, including our democratic system of government. George describes his affinity for our democracy from an early age, with a full acknowledgement that anyone who wants to participate in government can and should. After breaking into the political world under the tutelage of Senator Frank Lautenberg, George became a close advisor and friend to Senator Cory Booker, eventually serving as his state director. Now, as Chief of Staff to Governor Murphy, George tells us what he believes to be the most important part of his job, shares some of the successes of the Murphy administration so far, and what he hopes to accomplish in the months and years ahead. We recorded this podcast on July 25th in the governor's office in Trenton, which, as you'll hear, is notably not currently located in the State House, which is currently under renovation, but rather in a nondescript office building at the end of the block. George tells us why this is important and how it has a particular effect on the way he does his job. And now, without further ado, here's George Helmy. George Helmy, thank you very much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate the time. No, I appreciate being on. Thank you.
I want to get started. I'm really interested specifically in the day-to-day routine of the Chief of Staff to the Governor of New Jersey. Yeah. So what time does your day begin? Who's the first person you speak to, aside your family? If you could take me through that, that'd be great.
Sure. It's a great question. Definitely no typical day, right? I always say that I have control over my schedule until the minute I walk into the office, because there's something happening at some department or in some area of the state that needs the chief's immediate attention, and you got to get that to the governor for a decision point. I've always been an early riser from my high school days, so I'm up very early in the morning. I take sort of an hour to myself to collect my thoughts, plow through old emails, do whatever reading, either for work or personal that I'd like to do. Then my boys are up and we go through our morning routine. But I'm here relatively early, sometime between, you know, 8 and 9. Mm-hmm. And then the day typically starts with whatever is the front burner issue, right? Is some legislation on our desk that's pressing, some legislation we're working on with the legislature that needs attention. What are the departmental issues we're doing? How are we advancing the governor's priorities? What the governor clearly, a lot of my focus is dedicated around what the principal is doing. What is he doing today? What's the plan around that in terms of communications and implementation? But this role, I think actually what I love about this role is there's no redundancies. Like, you are doing something different and something mm-hmm. incredibly important to the state of New Jersey and to the nation and to the people of this great state every single day. So the answer to how what is the typical day is there absolutely is no typical day. Right. And frankly, that's both the challenge and the great part of this gig.
And how old are your kids? You said you mentioned your boys.
Josh has turned 10. He's 10 in 3 months. And Elijah turns 7 in early August.
Have you found it difficult to adjust to this job and balance?
And, they're both very hands-on, strong managers. They expect a lot, which is what we all expect. They expect a lot from their teams. They expect a lot from the policies we're trying to put forward. And both of them, in terms of their management style, is not what's on the agenda today and tomorrow. It's what are we doing that advances us for the next 10 years?
Big picture.
Big picture, yeah. But with a real plan. Not just big think, let me have a stump speech. Big think, and how do we do that? And put it together with a timeline, and now you're responsible for it, which as a manager, I appreciate. I want to be held accountable. It's just how I've lived my professional career.
You mentioned transportation. Are there any specific issues that you are particularly passionate about that you take to this job and you'd really like to kind of sink your teeth in as an advocate here in the governor's office?
Yeah, look, I think, rail infrastructure is a big priority of mine for a number of reasons. As I mentioned, I'm an economics guy. I like to think about how investments create massive change over decades to come. If we look at, and just to take it 30,000 feet in the sky, if we look at what our competitor nations are doing, they are lapping the United States in infrastructure investment. You know, countries like China, the United Kingdom, France, Germany, Japan are investing, you know, somewhere between 5 and 9% of their GDP into their infrastructure. You know, last I checked, their Department of Commerce report was like 1.7% of our GDP is invested in infrastructure. That's going to have massive ripple impacts on mm-hmm. our economy. Second, from a, you know, maybe 10,000 foot in view, like if you just look at the corridors where we built out rail over the last 10, 20 years, those municipalities have thrived. So how do we do that to further transportation options in Newark, in Camden, in Patterson, into the suburbs? That's like a and the question we have to ask ourselves, based on what's coming out of D.C., right, is like, is America able to do big things anymore? I mean, just look at the holdup on the Gateway Project, which I was very involved in Senator Booker's office, still very involved in with Governor Murphy. The question before us is like, is America preparing for the investments necessary for the economy of the future? And the answer is no. So that kind of infrastructure planning, long-term policy on how we are moving people and products to prepare for the economy to come, and also prepare our municipalities to thrive today, you know, putting light rail, I mean, just look at what the Hudson Bergen light rail did in Hudson County to those communities. Imagine what it would do if we were able to get it into Bergen. Imagine light rail elsewhere in the state to provide the connective tissue to the jobs. Like, look, I want the kids in, like, I grew up in Jersey City before moving to Glen Ridge. I want the kids in Jersey City and Newark and Patterson and Camden and Trenton to have access to jobs that are going to create, you know, breaks in intergenerational poverty, not prepare them for $8, $10, $15-an-hour jobs. And, and that commuter access is a critical part of that.
So let's go back a little bit. You mentioned you born in Jersey City. Your parents are immigrants.
Yeah, Christ Hospital.
What were you someone who had always been interested in kind of politics and policy from an early age, or how did you really kind of find your way?
I was always interested in government, right? My father and mother, who are obviously big figures in my life, left a country they loved in Egypt to come here to give us a better future. And my brother and I weren't born yet. We were born both in the country. And growing up and seeing, you know, the things my father left behind, a country he loved, a family he loved, a job he was in, where my mom was, to come and provide for us. And one thing that was sort of a regular conversation growing up wasn't necessarily like partisan politics, but the opportunity to be involved in government, whether that was just casting your ballot or making your voice heard or running for office. Just, you know, my dad never allowed us to forget the opportunities provided in this nation that are not provided in others, not just Egypt, but just around the world, the opportunity to participate in government in basically any way you want. You want to run for school board? Go for it. You want to be on the soapbox rallying outside of an event? Do it. You want to run for governor? Do it. So that always stuck with me. And, like, you know, from being a Hudson County boy, like, you know, the Bob Menendez story always stuck with us, right? He's a guy's, again, line of the Senate. He's changed the world.
And worked his way up from...
Changed the world.
Yeah.
Immigrant, son of immigrants. Son of immigrants, changed the world. From a Hudson County school board to mayor to obviously his historic career serving the state of New Jersey. So that kind of stuff was never lost on us at the dinner table or in conversations. My dad just saying, you know, you can do whatever you want in this nation, and that's why he moved us to Glen Ridge, invested everything he had at the time to move us into Glen Ridge because he read somewhere that had a top 10 school system. And I credit the public schools, both in all the communities where I grew up and where I am today. And so there was always this desire to get involved in government. And then coming out of grad school is when I really said, like, I just want to try this. I want to say that I've tried it, see if it's for me. And then I fell in love with public policy shortly after meeting Brendan Gill and Frank Lauenberg. And I said, for as long as I can do this, I want to do it because I will never do more important work in my life.
And your first job was with Senator Lauenberg?
First job was with Senator Lauenberg right out of grad school. They took a shot on me. I worked very hard, worked my way up.
In D.C. or here?
In Newark, in the Newark office. You know, left that office after about a year and a half, went to New York to work for a Fortune 100 company. And then when Senator Booker was elected to the Senate, they asked me to come back.
So now you find yourself here in the governor's office. And not only are you right-hand man to the governor and confidant and close advisor, you also manage this entire office and the structure. Were there any kind of changes you wanted to implement when you came in? You know, you were looking back on your experience as a staffer in the United States Senate office, somewhat different than, you know, state politics, and still, but you're still the chief executive. Was there something that you had in mind that you wanted to come in and do right away, or just wanted to try to see how the office works and then adapt to it.
Yeah, I think there were two things I wanted to do as I came in. You know, one is there was a narrative out there that the executive branch was not working or didn't have a strong relationship with the legislative branch. And as I mentioned earlier in our conversation, I'm a relationship guy. And that doesn't necessarily mean you always get to yes. It's just that you can have candid conversations, and you keep the dialogue open. And sometimes that means you agree to disagree, but you have rational reasons behind disagreeing, not politically motivated ones. So I wanted to, reestablish or build upon the relationships that we had in the legislature. And, as I was coming in, basically the 2 weeks between, my announcement as the incoming chief and the first day I started, I reached out to literally every member of the legislature in both chambers, Republican mm-hmm. and Democrat, whether I knew them or didn't know them and didn't know. Made sure they knew I was coming in, made sure they had my personal cell phone number, and made sure that they knew that where there were issues of shared priority, I'd love to have a conversation. And where there was disagreement, I'm still open to the conversations, and I can get you, if we get to know, you will know why we are at no. The second thing is, and I've said this a bunch of times in other conversations, is I have always viewed my role either as a state director for Booker or now as the governor's chief of staff as a support staff, right? I'm never going to know as much about the communication strategy as the people who are paid to do the communication strategy. I won't know as much about the specific bills as the folks who are paid to know the in-depth pieces of those specific bills. But my job was to create a structure that empowered those folks and allowed them to succeed. So where we found inefficiencies or where we found that folks needed more staff or more people or direct lines of communication, my concentration in grad school is organizational theory and management, and I've done that both as a sort of academic exercise, but done it for two Fortune 100 companies as well as public sector entities. And so I wanted to come in here and utilize the skills that I had learned and implemented to benefit the structure of the front office and the departments that all report into here. So I would say it's two things. One is sort of the practical, how do we better the organization and make sure that, because I always felt like we had incredible and still feel we have incredible talent in the front office. Make sure those people are operating to their highest efficiencies, but also let folks down the street know we are open for business, we are open for conversation, we are open to for shared priorities, and that we, are resetting is the wrong word, but building upon what existed.
Is it difficult, and this just occurred to me because you mentioned the folks down the street, literally down the street, is it difficult to not be in the State House physically?
100%.
Yeah.
100%. I think it's an incredible impediment. I think, not being able to run into somebody at the cafe and ask about their kids and have that human interaction mm-hmm. is a part of what we do. That sort of like recognizing people's dignity and their humanity and having normal conversations
right.
outside of the one time you pick up the phone to say, I like your bill, I don't like your bill. That's helpful when you are saying, I don't like your bill, right? So I think it is an impediment to this governor that he's not there, that people can't just walk into the office and say, I want to talk to the governor. I mean, he's very accessible here, mm-hmm. but not being in the building,
yep.
not having your senior staff in the building, not having your communications and policy folks getting coffee in the same places and eating at the same places and sharing tables, I think it's a huge impediment. And one we are constantly and actively working to overcome, both in terms of like physical space, but also just making sure that we are continuing the dialogue in any way that we can.
Well, they may finish construction by, 2022
after
or something.
After our second term, probably.
So speaking of, at the end of the year, we'll be halfway through the first term of the Murphy administration. Do you have any clear goals in mind for the next 2 years? As the first term winds up, or is it, do you have something that you specifically like to accomplish?
Yeah, look, I think, first of all, I think it's important to reflect on how much he's accomplished in just, 18 months. We put out something, I think, on our 500th day in office about, promises kept and from the campaign promises and how much we've been able to do in conjunction with our partners in the legislature. Like, a lot of those things required. This is where I think the conversation sometimes, the reality doesn't reflect the narrative. In great partnership, we've been able to do a lot. That's not to say we agree on everything. But in the first 18 months, we've gotten a lot of really important things that impact a great number of New Jerseyans across the finish line. I would also say that this budget was really an adult budget that we presented. And for the most part, we got what we had asked for. There are things clearly we will continue to debate and discuss and advance. But if you just, even if you read the S&P report on our budget that came out, a fiscally prudent budget that moves us forward, makes the investments we need to invest, keeps the promises that we've kept to our public workers, and makes the advancements that you and I were just talking about in terms of investments that keep families coming and staying into New Jersey. What we would like to do, you know, long term, there's a lot of big things that we've sort of put out there that we need to crystallize. Clearly, short-term stuff, we got to get the exchange stood up on healthcare. You know, we still want to advance the conversation on cannabis legalization. Again, the governor, and I work for Cory Booker's, this is how I have always seen it. And the governor always talks about that as a social justice initiative first and foremost. You know, as we sit here today, by the end of this week, 600 or 700 more individuals will be arrested in New Jersey for low-level drug offenses. We want to take a look at revenue streams that, you know, make sure we can continue making those investments, right? So you take a look at our debt picture, you take a look at the investments that we need to continue to make over the coming years, we have to look at reliable revenues. I will just tell you that, you know, what we also need to look at clearly is our infrastructure, which we've mentioned a few times in this conversation, but I will just tell you, over the last few, you know, weather incidences we've had, whether they've been rain, excessive heat, and snow, we had infrastructure problems due to the heat the other day.
Yeah.
You're seeing on social media the impact of these flash floods, not only to our municipalities, but on our rails. So how do we address that? So I think there's a number of massive pillars that the governor has put out there for, and for the most part, they're economic-based. You know, incentives obviously is another big one. They're economic-based, meaning what are the investments we need to make sure that the state is on the correct economic trajectory, even in the face of oncoming fiscal headwinds.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I would put impacts of climate change. I would put incentives there. I would put both savings and revenue in terms of the budget piece. And I would say protecting New Jerseyans' health care as a number of the items we're working on.
Do you think there's a recession on the horizon? A lot of people have been saying that.
Yeah, look, I think there's at least a slowdown on the horizon. Just, you know, as a reader of you know, The Economist and the Financial Times, you know, most folks are projecting it, you know, 21, 22. The numbers change, but, you know, I think it was J.P. Morgan even that for the first time in a long time changed their trajectory from good to a downturn. And we have to prepare for that. You know, Jersey has 8 years of economic growth and has done very little to prepare for the rainy day.
Yeah.
And that's why, again, like, I think the governor's budget was prudent in maintaining, you know, a surplus, be it rainy day fund and closing balance, that will at least put us in a better place to continue the investments. Because what we can't do in a slowdown is put a stop to public sector, or sorry, public education spending, right? Those municipalities need that money. It's, again, a reason we have our families in New Jersey.
Yep.
So what we don't want to do, we're trying to, and this was not done in previous years, is allow ourselves to have the funds necessary to maintain our investments even as the economy starts to cool.
And the governor's slated to become the next chairman of the DGA. Do you think that'll positively impact New Jersey in any way as he gains, you know, a little more national prominence?
Yeah, I do. I think, look, again, I absolutely do. I think it's great for the state, and I think it's great for the Democratic Party in New Jersey to have their governor, the leader of the Democratic Party in New Jersey, as the head of the DJA. I think it allows us the platform to build on the successes that Democrats in New Jersey have had advancing issues that are very middle-class focused, and talk about how those have had a positive impact on our economy, you know, whether it was minimum wage, earned, paid sick, and talk about those investments and take that narrative state to state and help other Democrats win governorships and help us retain governorships, especially in a year where it's a presidential race.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Phil having that microphone, that megaphone, really, to be able to say, hey, look at what Democrats in New Jersey, again, it's not just Phil Murphy, it's Phil and Sweeney and Coughlin and all the Democrats. We've done great things that have positively impacted our state. You can replicate it, and it's a great, I think, launch point for a lot of the presidential campaigns as well. You know, who want to be the executive of the country, say, look what these executives have done, and it's worked.
And by the time you leave this job, what's one thing that you want to look back and say?
Man, you're already talking about my exit.
Well, you never know, right, with the turnover of these kinds of positions. But what's one thing you want to have as a legacy as a chief of staff to the governor?
There's no one thing, right? I'm my own harshest critic. And what I want to be able to do when I've left, and trust me, this is something it's an incredible honor and a blessing to be here, it is never lost on me, and I said this earlier in this conversation, that this is literally the most important work, you know, outside of being a father and a husband, but in terms of like my work, this is the most important work I'll do in my life.
Mm-hmm.
Just the impact that I'm able to have day in and day out is just a tremendous honor and a responsibility. What I want to be able to do or say as I'm leaving here is very much based on the reason I'm here and why I accepted the opportunity to be here, is to advance this sort of fairer and stronger narrative where there it's and, right? It's you can do better for the working class, for the working poor, for the middle class, and make this a fairer economy that also benefits corporations and businesses who we need and want to come to New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
Those things are aligned. So I want to say I advanced both big things like the Gateway Project or environmental cleanups or the next regime of incentives. But I also want to do the little things and make it, you know, easier for someone to access health care in their local community. I want to make it easier for somebody who's looking to get a job, you know, up Route 24, one of the big corporations, to find the correct bus or train route to get there.
Mm-hmm.
So I just want to like be able to rest on the fact that every day I came in and advanced the ball incrementally down the field for progress that fits the narrative that I've always believed in. That was the same policy narrative from Senator Lautenberg to Senator Booker to Governor Murphy. And honestly, I've been incredibly fortunate to work for three folks who put policy before politics, allowed me to voice my opinion, and work on issues from a policy perspective that I believe deeply in. The other part which is important to me, just in terms of who I am, is I'm not naive to the fact that, you know, we have to take on hard battles and we have to hold our ground, and I work for Phil, and there's never a separation between where I am and where Phil is on an issue. Once the boss says go, we go in that direction. But I believe that, you know, treating people with dignity and respecting their humanity and respecting their positions and continuing dialogue, I want to leave here knowing that I never treated anybody with disrespect,
mm-hmm.
That I treated them with dignity. And even when we disagree or I felt they were being unfair, I did not do that in kind. So I'd like to leave here. Maybe not with all the relationships I came into. I'm not naive to that. That's part of doing this job. It's a hard part of doing this job. But I want to be able to walk away saying I did things for the right reasons and the right way, and let the cards fall where they may.
That's great. Thanks very much. I really appreciated the time
you
spent with me today. I want to just wrap up real quick, something I like to call Fast Five, just five random questions.
Okay.
What's your favorite movie?
I am a big Family Man, which is a Nick Cage movie.
Yeah, right, and the Christmas movie.
The Christmas movie.
Yeah, it's not a bad movie.
I'm also a big Godfather 2.
Okay. What is your favorite vacation spot?
The Outer Banks in North Carolina.
What is a go-to late-night snack for you? If you're coming home late, kind of rummaging through the fridge.
Oh, that's a great question. I'm a big Oreos guy.
Okay.
Yeah.
You split them like... take them apart.
No, hole no. In the okay. Milk.
Who's one politician or historical figure that you look up to, you try to follow their example?
Oh, that's a great question. Bobby Kennedy, who,
okay.
As you probably look around the office, there's as many pictures of him and Frank and Corey and Phil.
Mm-hmm.
So Bobby Kennedy.
That's a good answer. Yeah, I do see. I'm looking around. There are a lot of pictures. Yeah.
No.
Last question, what is the, you talked a lot about your job and the things you enjoy and what you hope to accomplish. What's the worst thing about your job?
The worst thing about the job, you know, the hardest thing about the job is the hours you spend away from your family.
Yeah.
That's the hardest part.
Mm-hmm.
I'm out very early and, probably four nights a week. I'm home very late. And mm-hmm. Even on the weekends, you're on the phone. And I don't say that to be like a negative. It's just
the hardest part
of the job. You're just constantly on the phone. I just, as I said to you earlier, is like, we're in the relationship business. So if someone wants to call you on an important issue on a Saturday afternoon,
you have to pick it up.
You pick it up.
Yep.
And the senators and the assembly members, they respect that.
Yep.
Like you're taking their call because you know they are important, and therefore their issue deserves a hearing. But that's definitely the hardest part of the job.
Well, George Helmy, thanks again very much. I appreciate it, and we'll see you around Trenton.
I appreciate it, man. Thank you for having me.
Okay.